Today on The Grave Talks, High Heels and Hauntings, a conversation with Michelle Jennings and Dawn Martin. Sometimes curiosity gets the best of you. Sometimes after living through paranormal experiences and reflecting on them later in life, you have questions. Questions that need answers as to why and how these paranormal encounters had come to be. Michelle Jennings and Dawn Martin are two such ladies who seek these answers every time they venture out into the world of the paranormal together. Today, we hear their story on The Grave Talks. The first question I have for anybody, and I'll throw this to you first, Michelle. All of us who are in this world of paranormal, whether it be an investigator like yourselves or someone like me who sits in a studio all day, every day talking about this stuff, we have a passion for it. And it was sparked somewhere at some point in time. Some of it's childhood, some of it's this or that. For you, when you look back as far as you can, where does your interest begin in the paranormal?
Wow, that's a very good question. So, I started having things happen to me as a child, where probably most of us have, that's where our journey began. But you don't realize until you get older what happened to you back then. But I think the first experience I had was probably when I was around probably 6 years old. My bedroom door was open in the house that we lived in. And I saw a woman come walking down the hallway in what appeared to be like a nightgown. So as a child, you rationalize things because you don't know anything about paranormal. You don't know anything about ghosts. At least I didn't.
Sure.
So I get up thinking it's my mother. Probably didn't look anything like my mother, but as a six-year-old child, you just assume that's my mother. So I got up and I started following her down the hallway. And she went into the living room and then she went into the kitchen and I'm following her and trying to talk to her. And this woman just disappeared into the wall. She just walked right into the wall and was gone. And as a child, I just didn't think anything of it. It's just a memory that I have always carried with me. As I got older, I started having, I would have dreams and then sometimes I would have dreams about someone dying and then the very next day find out that someone died. This has happened to me several times. Just different things I would pick up on when I got older into my 20s. I would go into places where probably spirits were and I would be able to pick up on that, but again, didn't know what was going on. It wasn't until I got into probably my 30s that I realized that there are people who have these same experiences as I do, and they are paranormal investigators and they go out to places and they investigate. And it just opened up a whole new door for me. And I felt like I was finally in a place with people who understood what I was going through and just got into the paranormal investigating. I did do it by myself. I would go to places, just kind of do my own thing. And then I joined a team and then now started my own paranormal team.
Interesting. When did you have that realization as an adult, when you were kind of reflecting back on childhood and you hit that memory of the woman in the hall that was not your mother, obviously, that goes through the wall? Was it, what was that like? What was the realization moment and how did that go for you?
It was kind of a relief, I think, because I always wondered about it. And then I really, it was aha moment, like, aha, that's what's going on. I think probably when I started doing my own paranormal investigating and being able to start picking up on spirits in places, it was just like an aha moment. Yep, mm-hmm. That's what that was. And
yeah, it is interesting how perspective works like that. I had one similar where I had a cat that used to jump on my bed when I was a kid. and then after it died, I still felt the cat jumping on my bed at night. And I always thought, I never thought of it as paranormal until one day I was on the other show, Real Ghost Stories Online, and somebody had a similar story. And it was a very much an aha moment of, oh, that wasn't just like muscle memory. That's what that was. But sometimes those, you look back and those moments hit you in a weird way.
Yeah. And it just opens up a whole new door for you. You're just, okay, so this is what's going on. This is what I have. Let me explore this. Let me, you know, let this happen. And, and that's what I did. And it's been good. I love doing what I do.
Dreams of people dying and you had that and then people actually die. Does this still go on? How do you handle that?
I haven't had it for a while because I kind of shut it down. I didn't want it to keep happening because it was pretty weird. I think the first time it happened, I was 16 and I had a dream that this girl, she was probably about maybe 5 years old that was in our foster home. And I had a dream that someone called me and said that she died in a car accident, which was crazy. It freaked me out. I got up out of bed and I just couldn't believe it. So the next morning I said, don't let her drive when she gets older, because I just had this horrible dream that she died in a car accident. And that same day I got a phone call that my cousin had died that night in a car accident. And then I would say probably when I was 21, I got married and I had a dream. And in my dream, I saw a funeral, a hearse, a funeral happening in my dream. And the very next day, my husband's grandfather passed away.
So you didn't know exactly who these people were that were going to die. It's just, it was
not almost, not until the next day.
Okay. Okay. There's like omens of death, but not enough to pick up the phone and say, don't leave your home.
No.
Okay.
Nope. And I had it one more time when I was a little bit older. My great grandmother passed away and I dreamt that she came to see me. And I knew when I woke up, I kind of knew that she had passed, and I even called my mother. And then we found out that next day that my grandmother had passed. And I didn't like that. I like all the other things that open up to me, but that was one that I wanted to quickly shut down. I didn't want it to do that anymore. And when I did that, I have not had it happen since then.
How does one shut that down?
I just sat there and I kind of did like a little bit of a meditation. And I just said, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to know. Please stop. I don't want these dreams, whatever they are called, to happen anymore. And I just, you mentally, I don't know how to describe it. You just kind of mentally with your body and your mind, and I just shut it down.
Okay. That's very, interesting to try and understand how one does something like that, especially if they don't have that ability to turn something on or turn something off, something we hear about quite often. Dawn Martin is also joining us. She's a partner of Michelle in your ghost adventures. Dawn, same question for you that I had originally. How, when you look back as far as you can, where does your interest in the paranormal begin?
I was actually been with my dad and my stepmom in a house in Detroit. It was a pretty older part of Detroit, and it was a bad part, but I didn't understand the kind of haunting we had because I was a child. But we had somebody coming up the stairs, and they would get to the top of the stairs, they'd walk down our long hallway, and my door was to the right, the attic was straight. And they would stop at our door, and me and my sister would be so frightened. We're like, we have a gun, we have a bat. We thought somebody was breaking in the house. We were just kids. Go and tell my dad, somebody's up there. And it was always 12:30 every night, well, in the morning. So, and I told my dad every night, this, somebody's coming up them stairs. And he kept telling me, no, there wasn't. Now I know as an adult that was a residual haunting in that house. My aunt also had a paranormal experience in the house on the stairs. She had moved into the house with us, so I gave up my bedroom upstairs for her and her family, and I moved into a bedroom downstairs with my stepsister. She had the fire had started in their bedroom closet from an ashtray or something, dumping it out. Mm-hmm. And she was running up the stairs and it was like hitting a brick wall in the middle of the stairs, like she couldn't go up anymore, and somebody had told her, go now. And she was like, my purse. And then she seen the smoke and she just went out of the house. So, I mean, my sisters had experiences in the house. It was mostly the upstairs. Normally you wouldn't be afraid of your upstairs, but ours was extra scary, where you could go in the basement and get an uneasy feeling, but it was the top of the house for that one. And then when I was around 22, I had moved to a different house in Detroit, and it had some paranormal activity. I had my son, he was 2, and my cousin and his wife had moved in with me, and they had a daughter that was 2. And the daughter was actually, the mom had died right after her birth, and the dad was my cousin and got with another woman that was raising her daughter. So it was kind of weird, but we were sitting in the house. We were having one of those horrible, horrible summers of heat, and a fan come flying at Melissa, the girl that was taking care of the baby. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, you know, there had to have been something behind that. The fan was on, you know, I was making up all the excuses why. And then her baby started crying. So we went into the bedroom, and her baby was already using a toddler bed where my baby was in the crib. Well, somebody had took her baby and put it in the crib, but there wasn't no mattress.
Okay.
Laid down. It was only the spring. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I remember
sure.
The word. Yeah. So the baby was in there crying because they took her mattress out, put it on the toddler bed. And yeah, so that house was crazy. And my current home I live in, I think because we do so many investigations, we just get a little attachment here or there. But yeah, we've had our fair share of ghosts. And I started doing my investigating really around 10, 12 years ago with my cousins. We would go to places here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michelle and I, and really all of our team, we all met at the same place. Like, it was kind of weird. It brought everybody on her team together.
Sure. Detroit is an interesting city as far as, you know, its history. And I mean, just the city itself. I mean, the state of the city, where, you know, obviously a massive population at one time, still very large, but, you know, there's just chunks of it that, you know, have definitely seen better days. With that being said, just a personal opinion, do you believe like a city like Detroit that has seen so many things come and go, and emotions that would be attached to all of that coming and going, and intense, you know, excitement and joy when it was in its heyday to it falling apart in so many ways. And then as it's slowly, we're seeing some rejuvenation of the city in more recent times. But do you think that creates an energy throughout that area that is attractive to ghosts or paranormal activity?
Oh, absolutely. Detroit has like some really good hot spots down there for paranormal. I mean, we have a lot of original buildings down there that are sadly just decomposing.
Yeah.
But some of them, they have their little stories about and everything. And I mean, I would love to get into a few of them, but they're privately owned and can't get in.
Sure.
They won't allow people in. But I mean, we just took our team to a cemetery there, and it was a really cool story about it. The cemetery is called Woodmere, but the people that were brought there were actually people that were buried in this part of Detroit, and the mayor didn't want the cemetery there anymore. He had a lot of the graves moved. But people, when they knew the graves were being moved, they would go and steal the stones because they would be marble and they could use them as porch steps, or they could use them on their counters. They would use them in bars. So a lot of people are still buried under what's now Eastern Market.
How creepy, sad, and interesting all at the same time. The idea of stealing a gravestone to use as like a porch step or in a bar or anything like, have you ever come across that? Like just out and about, you're at the bar and oh my God, that's a grave over there.
I have not. I know back during, at one time during the 1800s, they thought it was really cool to have stuff like that.
Yeah.
I remember they would steal things from, you know, Egypt, from, you know, things that were probably very valuable. They thought it was fun to just have it in their home as an attraction, a piece of art. So I don't know why back then they did think that. And to answer your other question about Detroit, you know, there's a lot of things that happened in Detroit. You had the riots that took place there. When you get a lot of things going on, the energy has to still be trapped there in that city for sure, which probably, you know, any city, but.
And like the bad parts of Detroit have always been the bad parts of Detroit, and that's not the parts they fix up. Those are the parts that I think has more of the concentrated energies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're older cemeteries. I mean, absolutely. Like the maker of Carhartt, he's buried there. And we just went and visited his mausoleum, and there was a lot.
Sure. Yeah, there is an energy there, certainly, that is, I mean, it's weird because sometimes you have to look around and go, am I getting a weird energy just because, you know, you're going down a street and most of it's gone, but there's like some massive mansion right over here that seems to be kept up. And then the one right down the way is in utter disrepair. It's just, you know, it can be apocalyptic sometimes. And then you have to kind of transfer or determine where is your mind going? Are you actually feeling something odd because you're in an odd setting? Or are you feeling something because of literally the energy of where you're at? Is that difficult to decipher for you, Michelle, with when you have the ability to kind of sense things, which is which? Or is it easier for you because you do have that ability?
The things I have noticed, I think I pick up more on tragic events. Like if someone wasn't meant to go, I've made, you know, and in my investigating, I have found that I tend to make more contact with people that have died before they wanted to, or something tragic happened to them. I'm not sure why that is. But that seems to be what speaks to me the most on investigations.
When you have that and someone comes to you that passed before maybe their time should have been, what do you feel their goal is? Is it just to communicate with another soul? Is it, can you help me? Is it answer questions? Is it a kind of a bury? What do you find?
You know, and that's a really good question because I have gone as far to ask those questions. And normally we don't get responses to those type of things. We did have one incident where we were doing an EVP session, and just so anybody knows, it picks up sound that you cannot hear with your ear. Yeah, it comes through when you go back and listen to it. So we had a gentleman who had passed away, and many paranormal investigators have encountered him on investigating in this particular place. And I just wanted to know. So I just asked, I said, are you here because you want to be here, or are you stuck? And it very clearly came through on our EVP, and it said stuck. We couldn't get anything. Yeah. And we couldn't get anything else from him after that. But it leaves you with so many thoughts. Like, why are you stuck here? It didn't sound like he wanted to be there. It just, he didn't have a choice. So lots of unanswered questions about that.
Sure. And that's very true. And it's, I mean, there's so much of this is just conjecture. It's all opinion of what you believe based on the experiences that you've had. There's no right or wrong to any of it. When someone is in that state, or a spirit is in that state of being stuck, What do you think that is? Does it require some sort of human intervention from the right type of person who has the ability to, as we see sometimes, people are, oh, I'm going to pass them on. Do they need that? Do they want to be passed on? Is it something that the living can actually do? Or is that a very narcissistic thought that we have as living people going, I'm here, I'm going to show you the lights, even though you're like, yeah. Right, like you know, can't see anything over there.
I have never really, yeah, that's something I stay clear from. I don't want to, because I wouldn't know what I was doing with that.
Sure.
If someone else claims that they can, I'm very interested to find out how. I think in my own opinion, I believe when they say they're stuck, for whatever reason, they have to wait. I don't know why, but they're stuck here. They have to wait. Maybe there's a certain time that they're supposed to go. Maybe it's just so, there's so many questions
sure.
We have on that. And that's the only thing I can come up with is just maybe there's a certain time when, and I know this is going to sound really crazy, but this is another one of my thoughts that, you know, in the Bible, it does say that he will come again to judge the living and the dead. Well, I thought the dead were judged upon death. So if there is a second coming and he's coming to judge the living and the dead, maybe the dead have to wait until that time to be. And I know that's crazy sounding, but I mean,
no, trust me. I've heard more ghost stories than probably almost anyone in the world ever. And yet, no, there's nothing crazy about anything we talk about, trust me. That's an interesting observation,
your mind,
too.
And your mind just does that, you know, when you go on investigations and you get these answers, your mind just starts thinking, you know, why? And you try to come up with some rationale.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm left with far more questions than answers, you know, after doing this for this many years. Dawn, what's your thoughts on that?
So I'm kind of opposite on Michelle on that, actually. I do think that the right people can cross over. Spirits that do want to be crossed over, I think some are like needing to give a message before they can leave. I think they're stuck here until they can do what their message is. Mm-hmm. Or I think that they're stuck in the loop, like the residual hauntings. That's just where it's happened so much that it just keeps replaying and replaying in the same time, same place, same, you know, atmosphere kind of thing.
Yeah.
I do believe that people can be crossed over, but I know Michelle and I do use a Ouija board and we talk to spirits, but they don't never ask to be crossed over.
Yeah.
We don't make them.
Is that more of a living idea, you think, than it is a dead idea?
I do.
Okay.
I think it's more of a personal belief. We always think, well, if they're dead, they need to be dead and be gone too.
Sure.
I'm sure. Fine with my spirits. I mean,
mm-hmm. I want
it's great that they're there.
I want to talk about the Ouija board because that is an interesting hot topic sometimes. And on the other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, for the past 10 years, we kind of make a joke about October. We call it Ouija Awareness Month. And then play the More You Know music, like da 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 da. And there's I've heard, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stories about Ouija boards, most of them being negative. But I have had the handful that have been positive as well. But a lot of them, it doesn't end well when it starts out. When I was a kid, we played with a Ouija board at the party. And now 28 years later, my cat tries to eat me in my sleep. You know, it gets bizarre. Tell me about how you went in to start using a Ouija board. And I'm interested, did you see anything wrong with it to begin with? Did you kind of have those fears, you know, quelled and then started using one? Tell me how that all began for you.
Well, so I just also want to point out too, the Ouija board is about 130 years old. It's been around for a very long time. When the Ouija board was created, there were no rules. There, you know, how a game comes with rules and things that, you know, how you play the game. It didn't come with any of that. It wasn't until in the 70s that it was redone as this game. And then you had the Exorcist movie come out around the same time. And people just associated, you know, back during that time, there was so much of this, you're getting possessed, you're getting, yeah, you know, there's all this stuff happening. So it, yeah, it really gave the Ouija board a bad name. And I was one of the ones that fell into that belief growing up that Ouija boards, you know, taboo, don't touch
sure
those.
Yep.
But then when I started investigating, you know, people brought up to me that a Ouija board really is any other form of communication, a spirit box, EVP sessions. You're still asking questions and trying to get yes or no answers or have them speak to you. So yeah, when I looked at it that way, I thought, you know, this, you're right. A Ouija board really is just the same form of communication. So I really started just reading about it, researching it. I bought my first Ouija board, which is the Ouija board that we have. And we have just really gotten into it. It's just something, it's mine and Dawn's, I think, favorite way to investigate, because it seems to be, especially with our board is very active. I don't think we've been at a location where our Ouija board has not spoken to us. Mm-hmm. And we're very respectful. If they don't want to talk, we're very respectful of that. We say goodbye, we move on to the next spirit that might want to come through and speak with us. But yeah, we do get a lot of, we've had to remove some people from our Facebook who decided to come on and just really give us a hard time. I mean, if you have an opinion about it, that's
sure,
we always welcome that. But some people were taking it a little further than that.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. Like I said, to us, it's just another form of communicating as if with each sure other.
And that's why I'm curious about your perspective on it, because so many times we hear the negative. So that's why, ooh, this is interesting. I want to hear how can this be done right? Because I don't know. I think I agree. The more and more that I hear stories, the more and more that people are using this equipment or that equipment, what is the difference? I mean, it's almost, it's like the way we get news or information. Back in the day, we would get it, you know, through the newspaper or whatnot, and now we hear it audibly. So it's almost like there's a progression in that with EVPs or obelisks or whatever you want to throw in there that people are using. Is there really a difference between asking someone to communicate this way versus the Ouija board?
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
To me, it's the same. I think, you know, you can get an attachment on an investigation. And let's say you didn't take a Ouija board with you. And there's people out there who have had attachments. You didn't have a Ouija board. Mm-hmm. You still had an attachment. You still had something negative happen on your investigation. Because I know a lot of people will say, well, you're going to have something negative happen to you on mm-hmm your investigation. That can happen with or without a Ouija board.
Sure.
And like I said, it's just how we feel comfortable communicating, and we feel like it gives them, I think spirits want to talk to you sometimes. Sometimes they don't.
They line up.
Yeah, they want to
communicate. They do. It's one way or another.
The board, for some reason, it seems to be an easier way for them to do that, I feel, with some spirits. And yeah, that's just where we're at on that.
Dawn, thoughts on the Ouija board?
I love it. I've used it since I was a kid. My grandma actually used to use a Ouija board with me at her apartment building. And she had her tarot cards. I have them now. I don't use them. I don't even know how, but I have them. But I mean, so when
I didn't know that, you need to bring those.
Oh, okay.
Bring the family tarot cards.
Yes,
we will. They're so old. I mean, they're like so old. But I love the Ouija board, and it's just more of a Michelle and I thing. The other people on our team, they have other things that they like to use more, and we respect that. Michelle, she has a style. I love Michelle's style because it's it mirrors me. Like, whatever she wants to do, I want to do it too. Mm-hmm. Whatever I want to do, she wants to do it too. So we like the basic stuff. I don't feel like you have to go out and spend a lot of money to ghost hunt, even though yes. we have a lot of equipment and stuff. We always use our basics. We love doing EVPs. We love the old Ouija board. I'll let Michelle decide if she wants to tell you what else we're going to start doing.
Yeah, I am not into the fancy gadgets. You know, mm-hmm. there's members of my team, they use the spirit boxes. That's something I just cannot get into.
You're going to start sacrificing pets. That's what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
I know. But I'm kind of old school, I think. I ordered it's from the 70s. I think it was sold in the JCPenney catalog at one time.
A leisure suit?
it's a tape recorder, you know, the old cassette recorders.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going back into Hans Holzer kind of days, but sure. I want to try that on some of our investigations and see how that picks up on EVPs. And then old style cameras, Polaroids. Just going to go back old school and try things out. Of course, we still have new stuff too. We have new stuff that just came in that we're going to be using on our next investigation. So we kind of compare. We do the old with the new, and we just kind of see what works best for us.
Yeah. That's interesting. Obviously, it's certainly not as instant, and everybody wants the instant. Oh, there's the evidence right there, right now. But do you believe like the material literally that is used to capture things, that the old magnetic tapes pick up things better than the more of a digital type approach?
Well, it did work back then. It did pick things up. Things changed. We adapted to the newer technology and everybody just kind of went away from that.
Yeah.
And I do think I see that more in the paranormal world now. I've seen a lot of investigators starting to go back a little bit and start comparing old equipment to new equipment. And I think people are starting to see that the old equipment, it works just as good as the new stuff.
Sure. Sure. Just the difference in how you review it, essentially. The instantaneous.
Talked about things following though, with the new equipment, we do have an SLS camera. So it kind of makes everything look like a stick figure.
Yeah.
I was looking at, because we've been on this team for almost 2 years, but me and Michelle, we were also on a different team before she formed her girls' team. Mm-hmm. Like a week ago when we were going through evidence again, I've noticed the small child on almost every investigation we've been on, but it always is by Michelle. And Michelle's always like, do you want to come sit on my lap? Do you want to hold my hand? And I'm like, Michelle, we have all these videos of you talking to this small person, and it's always the same size. So now that's something we're going to look into on our investigations also.
Yeah, it's really weird because she pointed it out to me the other day.
I think it's an attachment.
We've been on like 3 or 4 investigations, and on those investigations, I've encountered a child. We had one sit on the bed next to me at one investigation, one stood next to me at another one, and then at another one, it sat on my lap. And then at the other house, And she's like, Michelle, do you realize that this is every investigation on our SLS camera, you have had a child next to you? And this was just literally, I think, a few days ago, 3 days ago, we realized this. Wow, you're right. I got to figure out what's going on.
The SLS, because we were on a Navy ship and I had a full figure trying to, it was lunging at me and punching me in the head.
And the fact that it was the same, it's the same size, you know, people believe an SLS camera will sometimes pick up something that's near you, like a chair or a pole or something. And
but you can see,
you can tell
the pole in the just yeah. like
we make sure we look for those things so that we know it's legit. Sure. But it's just bizarre that I have this small yeah. person. And so we're really going to start looking into that.
That wraps up part one of our conversation. In part two, why does Michelle feel her Ouija board is more active than others? Is there a ghost of a child attached to Michelle? How do you properly use a Ouija board in a safe way? And what was a dark experience that both Michelle and Dawn had that affected them greatly on an investigation? For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.